So again, welcome on this Labor Day weekend. We've got an interesting set of texts today. We've got both Proverbs and the Psalm and James all really addressing what is the heart of the God who is known in the Old Testament, which is to say the God of justice. That God is often sort of stereotyped as the God of violence. And there are certainly violent stories in the Old Testament, but when you start to separate out what is the human misperception of God with the true nature of God, then I think what you land on quite deeply is this unique revelation to the Hebrews, you know, thousands of years ago, that God is not there to endorse human power structures, but to call all of us to recognize each other as brothers and sisters and live with justice. So you've got these texts in Proverbs and the Psalm and in James, but then you've got the Gospel. And this Gospel text is really, they're two separate stories, but the Gospel text seems to be coming up pretty regularly. In Matthew, she's called a Canaanite woman. But there are these two versions where she is a woman. Well, she is in many ways compromised. She's a woman. And she's a Gentile. And she has a daughter who is has an unclean spirit. And we can translate that. A daughter in trouble. And she comes to Jesus and she begs him for help. She pleads with him. And then what Jesus seems to do is he seems to call her a dog. It's not right to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. And like I say, this lesson comes up pretty regularly. A couple of times a year in its variant forms. And I've gone back over my sermons and I think I've done kind of, good work, clever. If you think of it this way and this way and this way and this way and this way, and then it sort of makes sense. And then I look at the translations, the Greek word for dog really isn't dog. It's kind of a diminutive. It's closer to puppy, so that you can say it's not right to take the puppy's food and throw it, the children's food and throw it to the puppies. But I've looked at all the commentaries, I've looked at my own sermons, and the bottom line is, I still don't know what's going on between Jesus and this woman. I don't know. And I'm not going to try to press myself beyond that, at least today. I'll get another chance in a couple of weeks. I'm not going to press myself beyond that today, except to say two things. Here I am, here we are, looking at a text that is roughly 2,000 years old. And it is a text that is born of huge tensions of 2,000 years ago, and those tensions, in a sense, are persisting now. We can look at our contemporary world and still see places where ethnic, racial, and religious tensions are such that violence is likely to erupt, as it was then. And so you have this encounter and have Jesus' rather bewildering response. And rather than force that response into some kind of tortured interpretation, I am going to say, I really don't understand what's going on. But here's what I do understand. Jesus was not cruel. Throughout his life, showed extraordinary attention to the poorest of the poor, the people who, for whatever reason, were in danger or had completely become marginalized, excluded, at the limits, the prostitutes, the women, the unclean people, the Gentiles. Jesus was not poor. Was not cruel. And so, though we hear a story that says, "Ah, it sounds like he's calling her a dog," I reject that in principle. I say something is happening over the space of 2,000 years. Our little telephone game, he called her a dog, you know. I'm going to say, I don't understand what Jesus is doing here, but it doesn't cause me to rethink fundamentally my understanding of who Jesus is. And I also don't think for a moment that this was, as many commentators say, this is Jesus coming to the understanding that his mission included more than just the people of Israel. Again, that doesn't make sense. Jesus lived from the deepest illumination and wisdom we can possibly imagine. He knew that the God he called Father was the God of all people. That was not a hidden secret from Jesus. And so let's just allow that text to be unsettled for today. We don't know what was going on between Jesus and the Canaanite woman or the Syrophoenician woman. But we know that Jesus as a figure was, as we have come to know him, very concerned with the welfare of the people that got beat up by the culture. And so he is not going to be kicking this woman when she is down by calling her a dog. Something else was going on there, and let's reflect on that together. As to the other texts, I want to lean sort of on two primary elements of them. And the psalm really is the distillation of that. One I've already alluded to is justice. The God of the Old Testament is primarily the God of justice. That the revelation that God is not there to endorse human power structures. Pharaoh turns out not to be God. Not there to endorse power structures, but to call all forms of human social life to justice and to fairness, and to say, how is the commonwealth? How are we doing together? And how balanced are things? Might be a question we would ask today. How balanced are things? Is the wealth of the wealthy outstripping the poverty of the poor in unendurable sort of magnitudes? And we would have to say today, yes. What is it now? Is it like 500 people control more wealth in the world than the lower 5 billion? Something, I mean, it's something like so absurd that you have to go, that can't be right, and then it turns out to be right. So we need the Old Testament to continue to put before us questions of the social order. Christianity often has tended to be, it has its wonderful sort of vision and voice for the oppressed and for justice. But in many circles, it becomes a religion of private salvation. And that betrays the vision of Jesus, and it betrays the God of the Old Testament. If it's only what's in it for me. No, it's what's in it for us. How are we doing? So there is this concern for justice that I would say is really central to the Old Testament. And then there is this element of what I call subjective transformation. The blind have their eyes open. The prisoners are let out. Or as the story we hear today, the deaf man starts to hear and he recovers his speech. And this is actually a core set of images and metaphors in both the Old and the New Testament. And one of the signs that God is sort of stirring and active among the people are the messianic signs. He makes the blind to see and the lame to walk. But let's not fall into the trap of thinking that these images apply to somebody else. Who's blind? Who's blind? Are we blind? Are we deaf? Are we languishing in any number of prisons? Metaphorically, but that image of the human self, the human soul, imprisoned. Powerful image. And so what you have is these teachings about how deeply we are in need of those kinds of subjective changes. To have our blindness taken away, that we can see the world as it is. To have our ears opened so that we hear not just the cacophony of culture blaring at us, but actually the voices, all the voices that need to be heard. The voices of lament, the voice of creation, the voices that need to be heard. We need our sight, we need our hearing, we need to get out of prison, the prison of fear or doubt or cynicism or despair. And I want to lean even harder on this idea that we ourselves need to change. Because one of the things that that frustrates me on a pretty continual basis about, say, the liturgical language that we use, is that so often that language is as if we're trying to get God to do something. Trying to get God's attention, trying to get God's help, as if God were the problem. As if God, God, please, come, come. Hey, like we're stranded on a mountaintop, we're waving our arms, we see the plane riding around, but we can't get its attention. It's the way it feels like we're talking about God often. And the issue is exactly other. The issue is not God. We are the issue. As Meister Eckhart says, God is at home here. We are in the far country. We are somewhere else. And these images of blindness and sight, recovery of sight, recovery of hearing, getting out of prison, all are images of us coming home from the far country and finding ourselves awake here. And only when we cease to be blind and cease to be deaf and get out of prison can we fulfill what is our primary mandate, which is to be stewards of God's creation. And part of that stewardship, if not the central part, is to recognize God's presence in all things. For many, many centuries, the church has implicitly and often explicitly said, this is where you find the sacred. And while we speak of the sacred, I would suggest one of the changes that is coming upon us is that what we do here as a community is remember that we live in a sacred creation. And remember that as children of God, we are charged with sacred responsibility. So that the sacred is not so much found here, as here we are a community that remembers our relationship to the sacred presence of God. And then we go out and we recognize it everywhere. As I keep saying every week, tell me where is not sacred. Tell me where it is. Teilhard, for the one who knows how to see, nothing is profane. Nothing is without God. So let's hear these. Let's take that teaching of Jesus as a grain of sand around which we are going to form a pearl. Let's do that. And then let's take these other teachings that really speak to our need for overcoming our blindness, letting ourselves have our eyes opened and getting out of prison, that we might do the work that we're charged with doing, which is to give praise and to recognize and to celebrate the infinite value of every creature that God has made. Let's see that and respond appropriately and know that in doing that, we are doing the loving work of God.